Accession number 26864, Reel 11.
Arthur Caney, Reel 11. So, after the amalgamation, what sort of job were you doing then?
Well, I was doing the same job as the archivist of the battalion, but it was a full-time job, and I found I was working to 8 o'clock at night. I was doing Saturday afternoons and Sunday mornings. And when I got to doing Sunday mornings, as well as all the others, it was got a bit... There's only way to do it. But
was there so much more work, or were you not getting cooperation?
Well, our staff was reduced. Our numbers were reduced because people were leaving the army. And you didn't have trained men coming in. So you had to do everything. I did the accounts myself, the whole lot. And at the time of the amalgamation, I had a very good QM before. But then he left and I was on my own. And a new QM came who had been in the CCG, Control Commission for Germany, and of the same regiment, but he didn't understand. And he called the accountants in to check the battalion stores, which is fair enough. But because we'd been on from wartime to peacetime, I'd made sure, and the others had made sure, the colour sons had made sure, we had plenty of stores, so everyone had a surplus stores. So I said to him, look, I'm responsible, I'm doing all the accounts, and I'm responsible for everything in this unit. Now, the following items, I knew I had to say something to him. That I said, well, the following items are not are suspect. I said, we have 5 US unserviceable items, ground sheets deficient, 6 mugs and something else. Something silly it was, really. It didn't had no value. He didn't know this, but it had no value. I could have paid it out of my pocket. Anyway, I had to say something, or they wouldn't believe me. And they called these civilians in to check the stores. Now, what he didn't know, and I didn't know at the time when they came to see me, they were from the same staff headquarters that the QM, who'd gone away helping them, I'd been carrying out his duties as a quartermaster, and he'd gone away to help them. Now, I didn't know that. So, obviously, they knew that they couldn't find much wrong with my accounts. Anyway, this chap told them in front of me, he said, I want you to check the following items. After about 4 or 5 days, they did the check, and we had a report come through, and it said, this unit's accounts are exceptionally well maintained. Now, that was a unique. Nobody has ever had this. They don't do it. The army, the civil servants, they do not tell you. That was unknown. I know why, because they knew how well we were done. Now, all this new QM did was to put on, tell the staff. He put a note on it. He didn't call me in and talk to me. He just said, tell the staff. Now, I thought, well, I couldn't tell the staff. No need to, because nobody had done it. I was doing all the accounts. So then I thought to myself, has anyone else seen it? And I feel today, to this day, that nobody had seen it. Now, in my own unit, that would have been, everybody had been very pleased to have a wonderful report like that. So from then on, I was feeling a bit not quite happy. And then another silly thing was, oh no, I won't do this.
Are you sure?
Well, this is tricky. We're talking about peacetime now. We were all amalgamated, changed over. And there's not many people. George Warner, my friend, he'd gone off. All the other officers had gone that I knew. They were all strangers. But because of that report, I think, the 2IC of the unit was a stranger as well, from another unit, came to me and said to me, I want you to write your make your write out a report for the MBE. So I said, well, how can I write something for myself? So we forgot it. But I thought afterwards that that was not a very nice thing to do. It was a bit... It could never have happened in my own unit. I mean, it's so silly.
So why did they ask you to write out something then?
Well, I knew that the QM there would have not wanted it. I knew that.
Yeah.
But just that, well, they didn't know me, did they? I was in a unit where I'd been for 12 years, peacetime and war, and they didn't know me, did they? Because they're all straight. But even so, that was the wrong thing.
So were you glad to move away from Germany then? And
Oh, no, we went... No, we had to then hand over the unit to the guards. And we did... We were so then well trained that we handed over... I handed over 75 quarters with all their stuff and all the... in one day. Now, can you imagine... Can you imagine handing over to another unit? 75 families, checking the bill, checking it all. But I had a great friend, the bandmaster was a great friend of mine, and the bandsmen were very good, pretty well on the ball. So I got the band, nearly half the band, to represent me in all these quarters. And we handed a whole lot over to the guards and got on the train in the evening of that day.
And where did you go to?
Oh, we came back to Devizes.
Devizes, right.
And that's a very... That's our own home of the regiment. It was then.
And that was 1950, was it?
1950, yes.
Yes, yeah. I mean, this is the first time you'd been back in the UK.
Except on leave, yes.
Except on leave.
Oh, yes.
A few years.
Yes, it was it was a change.
How had Britain altered since you'd left?
We didn't have time to see, because we were off again.
Right.
I'm sorry, we were then in transit, in Devizes, for Hong Kong, as it turns out. But previous to that, in our previous place, my previous station, I'd already been into my... There was a lot of rumours going around in those days, and we always used to like to start a rumour. So I went into my... storeroom and got my box painted Hong Kong. On my box I put Hong Kong. But when we got our orders, we were going to Singapore. So we then got on the boat from HMS Fowey, wonderful boat.
HMS Fowey.
Fowey. To go to Singapore, although my box had said Hong Kong. So halfway to Singapore, they said, well, you're not going to Singapore, you're going to Hong Kong. So they thought I knew something, or my mates thought I knew something about it, but I didn't. I just guessed. Yes, we had a long time there. We had about 6 weeks on the Empire Ferry.
Yeah. And where did you end up? Singapore, was it?
We went on, instead of going to Singapore, the advance party went there for training. We were supposed to do jungle training. Then we, because of the Korean War, we were transferred to Hong Kong. And we went up country right on the border.
Oh, right.
So we went in tents.
Right. So what was it like arriving in Hong Kong, somewhere you'd not been before?
Well, it's all interesting, all very interesting.
Yes, tell me about it.
It was very good. Well, we moved into a tented camp. And
where was that?
A place called Fan Ling. Uh-huh. Fan Ling, right on the border. Uh-huh. And we've been so trained at mosquitoes, anti-mosquito precautions, so that I went round the camp with the pioneers and the other, a few more men to assist. We knocked over tins, any stagnant water was disposed of and sprayed, and I did a very silly thing. There was a lake there, a small lake, and I got them to spray it with DDT. The next morning, we found it was full of carp.
Oh,
killed. I felt quite ashamed of myself then.
But still, it might have been.
Well, we had to. No, well, everywhere we went. This is why we, the British Army, kept the malaria down. But everywhere we went, if you see a tin with water in, 3 days in some places overseas, it breeds mosquitoes.
So what was going on at Fanling? Were you guarding the border or?
Yes, we had the companies on the border, and we had our own tented camp, and the companies, two companies were forward on the border. And so, therefore, we were drawing stores from Hong Kong all the way down a long road, winding road on the two roads up into the new territory. Have you been to Hong Kong? And on the new territories. What we used to do, we used to listen to the typhoon warning. If you had typhoon warning, first of all, you start with a different colour. And as soon as I got the first warning, I would collect the vehicles, two or three vehicles, go to the Ordnance Depot in Hong Kong, and I knew I couldn't get back because the typhoon would arrive, so there was 3 days extra leave. It was a good way to enjoy life.
And what did you see in Hong Kong?
Hong Kong! Oh, we had the, yes, we would. I was, because we'd, we invited the Navy up to our camp, HMS Renan. They were from Hong Kong. And because of that, we were friends with the one of the chief petty officers and so on from the HMS Renan. And we would then be able to get on their transport from Hong Kong to go to the beach. So, and China Fleet Club, of course. We had the facilities of the China Fleet Club, which was far better than the troops. Our own. It was good life, Hong Kong.
What did you see of the Chinese on the border? Were they the other side of the border guarding?
Well, we did not many at all in the early days when I was there. I didn't go there much. I'd just drive out to sea. I used to take my staff out for swimming twice a week. All sorts of things. We couldn't do much sports, so we'd go swimming. But unfortunately, it didn't take us long to learn that you couldn't go swimming near the sampans. I've been swimming there, and oh dear. You only swim once. You find you're swimming amongst the effluent from the back of the boat. You could see that. And some of our men caught all sorts of diseases on the border, food-wise.
Really? Why was that particularly? Was it lack of refrigeration or what?
Well, it was filth, wasn't it? Filth. We hovels. I mean, they were eating in hovels. I mean, all sorts of things for the stomach, you know, worms in the stomach. Oh, what shocking. It was silly to do it, I mean, only when they'd had a few drinks, I suppose.
So, how long were you in Hong Kong?
Not very long. I didn't get my wife. My wife could have come out, but I wasn't quite happy with the unit. It wasn't as I'd known it. It changed. And, of course, the chap who I was with was not a great friend of mine, and unfortunately, I'd been used to doing things the correct way, and we had contractors, and you had to keep on top of the contractors, checking the bills and things like that, and once you start not doing that. So I felt that it's time I left. I looked round, there was not many people nobody, I think, in my own unit, maybe one or two that I knew. So it wasn't like leaving. It wasn't the same as leaving the unit during the war. Had I left during the war, it would have been different. Mm. But then it was easy.
So, how did you, what did you think you would go and do? Did you have a plan?
Well, I knew, yes, I was posted to a place called Plaster down in Devonshire, mm-hmm. because we were then, the Wessex Brigade were sending reinforcements to the Gloucesters, and others overseas. So I then became, I ran the camp, a separate camp
at Plasterdown,
where all the training was going on, where we were collecting the reinforcements for Korea. So it was kitting them up with their winter clothing and things like that.
Right. And what year would this be?
1952.
Right.
Very interesting job that was.
Was it? What was interesting about it?
I was doing a job which really it should have been a commissioned job, and I was a warrant officer then. I was a quartermaster. I was doing what I wanted to do. Mm. I was doing it myself instead of acting for a quartermaster. So I was quite happy with that. And then I moved out to Wessex Brigade, Exeter. Mm-hmm. Although I found it very interesting there, because I had a bi-quarter. And then I started doing the same job, RQMS, of the brigade. Then I started going to Exeter University for the winter. I took evening classes for one winter. But I didn't, I couldn't spend much time there, but I was doing a postal course too, Metropolitan College. And I was doing hard work. I was working about 2 o'clock in the morning all the time.
Was this to fulfil an ambition of some sort? Or?
Well, I was then, let me see, 1952. Got my 18 years service. I was ready to leave the army or thought I'd leave the army, and to do that I was going to go in the civil service, because then I could I'd take a course from the army, which was a bit of a scrounge really, 10 days. So I took 10 days course as a civil service course, and I thought I'd go in as an EO. I thought I was wrong. I should have gone a bit lower. Anyhow, I studied, went on a course, and I did my Metropolitan College. Then I found that the paperwork I found with mathematics and things like that, I was getting the right answers, and they would give me no points for them. You see, so I had no one to talk to help me. So in our unit we had Education Corps officer and a sergeant, a very good sergeant, just left university. So I went to these two chaps, I said, here's this, I've got this, no points, and I've done it. But they couldn't do the problem I had. So I thought, well, what's the good? I mean, if they've just left university, what am I going to learn? I mean, I couldn't quite see how I was getting very far if there was somebody just left university and I hadn't. And I got the right answer, and they couldn't even get the right answer. So I thought, well, no, that's not much good. So I knew then that I would have to take an examination, civil service. So I took one in Exeter one day. And I went through a bit too fast. They had all sorts of new things there which I didn't understand, and I thought, well, I will guess these. Anyhow, I went through it very quickly. I went half the time it should be. I wasn't really so keen. I wasn't looking forward to a job through the system. It was just a chance. I think I would have spent more time at this examination. Anyhow, when the results came through, there were 700 sitting all over the country, and I was 350. So I thought to myself, well, that wasn't too bad. It's not any good. Then I found that there were only 10 vacancies. So that's another thing. I thought, well, what's the good of that? I was so exasperated. Yeah. When there was 10 vacancies. And there's, I got 350. Well, that was at least halfway. So I thought, well, now, what shall I do now? I realised I should have gone at a lower grade and gone up through the system as a civil servant. But then I was called up to the unit to become an RSM. my unit had come back from Hong Kong to Wiltshire. But I decided I didn't want to become an RSM, I wanted to become a quartermaster, because I'd been on that so nearly 8 years. So I declined that and went back to my own job, knowing that I would possibly get the call up for a job later. So in 1954, I had a call from the War Office. Would I go to Hong Kong as a quartermaster? So that was just what I wanted.
So you went to Hong Kong?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry, I've got the wrong place.
Right.
Kenya.
1954, you were called by the War Office to go to Kenya.
Yes.
Right.
So I went as a quartermaster to the 23rd Battalion of the King's African Rifles. They were African troops, of which there were 20 Europeans, 20 or 22 European officers and what.
Why do you think you were offered that job?
Well, because I didn't want to become... Everybody knew I could have been a good quartermaster. It was part of the... Well, I would have got the job...
Because you'd not been to Africa before, but you got it on the strength of your abilities as a quartermaster, do you think?
And the fact that I was ready to up sticks and go. I was called, I expect some other people were called, and somebody didn't want to go. I mean, I'd been used to... My wife, we had no children, my wife and I were mobile. We could go wherever we wanted, any time. And that made me available, I suppose.
So were you excited at the prospect?
Well, I was really, because it was something different. It was good.
And whereabouts in Kenya?
Well, I went to the slopes of Mount Kenya, a place called Karatina, which is on the slopes of Mount Kenya.
Karatina?
Karatina, yes.
Right. And what sort of a place was that when you got there?
Well, it was a dirty, dusty village, of which they had an Indian shop, Duka we call it, of which I couldn't believe it. Each night, at 6 o'clock, around about that time, a flimsy pop copy of the Daily Telegraph was delivered, and this was right up on the slopes of Mount Kenya. That had been delivered to Nairobi Airport, then he'd come up by road, and 5 o'clock at night, the same day, was a flimsy copy. Now, I've travelled other parts of the world where I've gotten them the next day, Spain, things like that. Anyway, that was very good. We were operational.
What was it like joining the King's African Rifles? Because this is a regiment that you know nothing about.
No, it was good.
So you were the new boy.
Ah, yes, but I knew
African
my job.
But
you see, when you go to those places, you know your job. It doesn't matter where you are. You know your job. And I was very lucky. The first day there, the MTO became a friend of mine within a couple of days. The adjutant was a friend of mine in a very short time, and we worked very hard, and I tried to learn the language to start with. That's a long story. And it was wonderful to join them, especially as they were operational. They were in the forest against the Mau Mau, and the first or second night I was there, the next morning, they came back with the people they'd killed. They killed 19 people in the forest that night. But the stories I heard, they make your hair curl, some of them. The oaths. You probably know the oaths. The Kikuyu tribe were not in the King's African Rifles. They were the educated ones. They were educated by the religious groups. So they became very clever very quickly. And so that they would become independent, they had their own... They had to change by oaths the manner in which the people lived. So where they were brought up in a religious manner, they had to switch that over. So they produced some oaths which were so vile, were so against their, they'd ever been taught, that once they'd taken those oaths, they became almost animals, the things they did. Oh, very. It's, some of them, they're not published now, but they are, you can get, well, they are about, you can get them now through the government, but they were so bad, so shocking, you couldn't believe it.
Did you feel, you know, that you were, in any sense, putting your wife in danger being in that posting?
Well, that's a funny thing you should say that, because when I arrived, I was up country. And I had the QM I took over from had just left, and I'd taken a quarter over from him. But my wife joined me, or at least went to the quarter on her own, and I had to send my batman, African, with a rifle down to her to stay in the hut. There were huts in a small cantonment, of which a few had been burnt by the Mau Mau, and unfortunately one was burnt and the RAF family in there couldn't get out because they had wire on the windows. In the end we fixed them, all the windows, with wing nuts. Anyhow, my wife arrived in the country. I couldn't get down because we were too busy, so I didn't get back for 10 days. So my wife was in there with an African in that, in my bungalow. Friends came, some, the RSM's wife went to see her and fixed up food and thing. But she was on her own there for 10 days, and I thought, well, that was fair enough. That was on her own in a new country with an African to protect her from the Mau Mau. But that was the way it was.
Did she blanch at all at the prospect
no,
of going to
she,
Africa? Or
no.
She
oh, no.
Was
Oh, she was all for it. Oh, yes, yes.
So what was it like being in an African regiment? I mean, were there any differences? And the men were obviously had different experiences. They weren't Europeans, so...
No, they were very... Oh, they were good. They were very good, especially in the forest. They were wonderful in the jungle troops. But they were smart, and I had my own staff, QM staff, and I arrived there in November, and I was invited to a farm by the adjutant and his wife, who'd taken over a farm. The wife ran the farm up country, up near Moingo, up near Wano. Oh yes, lovely, wonderful country. They had a farm. And they had a lot of labour protecting the farm, tribal police. They paid. So they invited me up and told the staff that I'd come up to shoot meat for them. Well, I took my rifle, and we had a wonderful weekend. So I went out with there was three of us there. That was the adjutant and his wife, my wife, and the MGO, plus this staff, their farm hands and tribal police, about 90 people. So I went out at night to shoot. So I went out the agent with a Volkswagen at night on their farm. So driving along, getting dusk, then it got dark, and suddenly a herd of buffalo. If you've ever seen the Wild West, you've seen buffalo in the Wild West. We had these coming towards us. We had the lights on, put the light on the Volkswagen. And as they came to the light, they jumped over the vehicle. And I've never seen so many vehicles so close. Can you imagine wild buffalo coming like that? Now, when it was all over, it was very quiet. There was one buffalo silhouette on the skyline. So I had a 303, which was just right for that. So I shot that, and we went back next morning and picked it up. We had to take a tractor, and the leopard had taken the inside out. So all this was taken back, this buffalo was taken back to the camp where they started eating.
Right, I'm going to stop you just there. Arthur Caney, end of reel 11.